going to stop talking in this kind of B2B, B2C terminology. It's not helpful to me where I am. And it's not helpful in creating meaningful engagement with your audiences at the end, right? It's H to H, it's human to human. And I think that's exactly what it is, right?
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Funnel Vision. We'll be speaking again with leaders in digital marketing that are thinking big and leaving their mark on the industry. So consider this an opportunity to stop and reflect and learn from some of the industry's best. I'm Paola Mejia.
And I'm Sasha Belenky.
Let's get started.
So today, we're very excited to get to speak to Tal Kapulnik, who is head of marketing at Eon. Eon's novel cloud backup, enabling enterprises to unlock the true potential of their backed up data. They were founded in January 2024. Tal, correct me if I'm saying anything wrong here. Eon has already filed dozens of patents for cloud storage and data management technologies and has raised $200 million in funding.
Nice work. That's exciting.
Yes, it's been quite the year for Eon.
It's not cheap to build cloud backup.
Clearly not.
But it's been a wild year and we're so excited. I think everyone, every day, feels just insanely surprised, overwhelmed, excited, thrilled. It's just really an amazing journey.
We're really excited to talk to you about that today. But before we jump into Eon, I really would love to, for our listeners, to learn more about your background, because you have, from a marketer's perspective, one of the like coolest journeys. You were at YouTube, where you dealt with the creator marketing, which is still so relevant, and also at Lemonade, which is, I think, a brand that, if people are familiar with it, just really has been able to take a topic that is not typically very exciting and make people very emotionally connected to it. So can you tell us a little bit about that journey before we dive into where you're your exciting place now?
Of course. I actually moved to New York City for graduate school at NYU and was an amazing time. Right after graduate school, I joined Edelman in New York, which is a big agency, was part of the corporate and public affairs practice. So I managed a lot of comms, social media, content creation work, and brand partnerships. I was really lucky enough to work with amazing brands as clients, being here in New York City. And during this time, I also had two of my daughters. And then, as a lot of people know, agency life is very intense. You learn a lot, some of the best work of my career, but you don't own your work as much. You deliver it to the client. And so I really decided to go in-house then. And that's when I landed the role at Google with YouTube's creator marketing team, where I was really, my goal was to make sure that YouTube creators, YouTubers have the knowledge they need about the product to really succeed and grow on the platform. So it was really traditional, kind of classic product marketing and comms initiatives. Super exciting time. Actually, COVID hit right around that time, which for YouTube was an insane growth moment. And I think that was just a huge learning opportunity about everything. When we say B2B, B2C, it was a combo of everything. These YouTubers are really making their career through the platform. So how do we make sure they have what they need to succeed in that career? And then the opportunity to join Lemonade Insurance came up and really lead their pet insurance product content and marketing. And then after a bit, I was then offered to start Lemonade's organic growth team and really overseeing all of the Lemonade owned channels, including the social media team, content marketing, content analytics. I loved my time at Lemonade. I love the people. I love the work. Lemonade's brand is really a fun brand to work with. And I learned a lot about that and putting the brand at the center as the holy grail of everything content and customer engagement related. And then Eon's founders reached out to me earlier this year, but I never say no to exploring an opportunity or having a conversation, even though this did seem completely outside of everything I've done before. After I met with the founders, I came back home that day and said, I'm going to take this. This is it. It's the opportunity for me. And a few reasons that actually made it so compelling. First of all, the founders are amazing people. They're super smart. They're humble. They're experienced. They're really what you want to work with in leaders. And the reason not to take it was really easy because I come from B2C, really different. This would be an enterprise product. I'm not a B2B person. But I was actually excited about that challenge. Taking a B2B enterprise product, something that has potential to be boring, I don't want to say too loud.
Boring.
It has the potential to be boring.
Yeah. It has the potential to be boring and unexpected, and really create something that is different. Really take that learning, even from Lemonade, right? Insurance is not something that people find to be very exciting in their life.
So the founders, the founders specifically wanted you because of that Lemonade approach, it sounds like, right? Like they were like, we can't be any old cloud infrastructure company.
Because they want to do what Lemonade has done with insurance. They want to create a brand that's not your expected B2B content, not the expected B2B brand interaction, really something different, because they really are building, or we are building, a product that, or a category that's completely changing the industry. And so with that comes a brand that's not what you'd expect.
How do you do that? No, really, because you can fall into traps of, Sasha and I were saying before this call, you look at competitors in the space and they all, I don't even have to open their site. I know what they look like. And I'm a little bored already. Sorry, guys, but I am. And so how do you differentiate yourself enough, but at the same time, play to some of the things that brand communicates, especially in a space like yours, like trust? And these are things that sometimes can equate to being traditional, but it's not necessarily true.
I think one thing I did decide in the beginning was that I'm going to stop talking in this kind of B2B, B2C terminology. It's not helpful to me where I am. And it's not helpful in creating meaningful engagement with your audiences at the end, right? Someone said to me in a conversation, it's H to H, it's human to human. And I think that's exactly what it is, right? And what it really means is really taking a lot of the things that I've been doing already over the years when it comes to the B2C type of work, and making sure that I'm not compromising for those in the work at Eon. One of the things that I think I would probably bucket it in three big buckets. One of them is making sure you're creating content that really fits your target audience and shows them that you get them. That's the personalization bucket. And at YouTube, that was like a big learning, especially when COVID hit. People were experiencing COVID so differently across the world. We had to not just make sure we say, use the contact's name in the email campaign to show them that we're personalizing. It was very much about understanding what's going on in their life right now. Also, different YouTubers had different challenges. So travel YouTubers were facing different challenges compared to food or cooking YouTubers, compared to gaming creators. So everything had to be super personalized. And I think I took that. We learned based on research and data and really tried to make sure every piece of content that we create lets them know that we get it. We know what they're going through and we're here to help through our product. And I think that kind of personalization aspect has also come with me to Lemonade, because we know that the different insurance products that Lemonade offers meet our users in different moments, whether it's pet insurance or renter's insurance or homeowners. They need different things. Different things are going on in their lives. So that's the first thing that we want to make sure. And when I think about Eon, obviously different teams, different companies, different industries are going through different things. So the goal is really, at the end, the vision is to create an experience that's right for them.
So first, I would encourage anyone watching or listening to this to just look at your website. Look at the Eon site. Eon.io. I usually don't plug the websites here, but really it's worthwhile because it's it's not what you would expect. It's colorful. It has this cool, like, retro animation that reminds me of the Jetsons.
It's retro with future. Like, how you manage to convey retro and future at the same time, I'm not sure.
If you look at every other cloud infrastructure startup's website, it does not look like that. So is there any part of you that was like, maybe there's a reason they don't look like that? Are we scared that we're not conveying the seriousness of this topic by going in this, like, totally different direction?
Yeah, no is the short answer. I think it's a combination of our founders and leadership that really feel that they want to do something completely different. We're constantly saying that we're creating something new, something different that's never been there before, and it's part of the game. So it was all when the creative team that we worked with introduced the different directions, there was the obvious clear direction. And it was very clear that's not where they're going. So it's a combination of that kind of leadership vision, I think. And it's really important. Plus, I think it does go back to the H to H, human to human, right? At the end of the day, Doesn't matter if I work for an enterprise, if I work for a consumer, at the end of the day, the person that's going through the experience, we want them to have a nice, a pleasant experience, even maybe smile when they look at the website, when they watch a demo video, when they get an email. And I think that's what we were going for, or what we are going for.
You know, you said now you're trying not to use those terms, B2C, B2B, but for the purpose of this conversation, we're going to keep using them. And I'm wondering, looking back a year ago when you were still saying, as you said at the beginning of this conversation, I just didn't think I was a B2B person. I think a lot of marketers who have maybe specialized in B2C perhaps look at themselves the same way and are wondering, are those career opportunities relevant to me? What did you learn? Are you a B2B person? How have you surprised yourself in making this transition?
I think, look, at the end of the day, I haven't surprised myself. I think I'm really trying to push a lot, and I'm pushing my colleagues and the leadership constantly. And that's what they hired me to do, to say to them, no, we shouldn't send out an email that's just boring because we want to do it quick and we want to generate leads. We need to like think about it, make sure every touch point with our brand matters and make sure that we shine through. And I think it's something that we're constantly going to have to do all the time, and it never ends. And I think in terms of my experience and kind of what I've seen or learned or like continuously challenged myself is being patient. I think there is something to B2B that requires more patience. With consumer products, a lot of times you're going to see immediate satisfaction, whether it's social content. Obviously, acquisition is a lot quicker versus enterprise product, where sometimes it's a nurturing process of a year until you actually see something or the fruits of your labor.
So I have a question about that, because I've also made this jump of more direct to consumer and now B2B. And I got to say, I miss the speed of the feedback. I really do. It's hard for me. But one thing that I struggle with, I think a lot of marketers struggle with, particularly when you have like content marketing as part of your approach in that nurturing process with B2B, and there is no direct attribution yet, or maybe ever, to this type of content, what do you rely on to sense check if this particular type of asset or the strategy as a whole is working for you? What do you use? Because honestly, I don't have the answers. I'm curious.
I think I always say we have to look at data. And this is something that's consistent, whether you're in a consumer product or a B2B product, understanding how your audience is engaging with your content is, at the end of the day, really what's going to tell you the story. So consistently looking at the numbers, whether it's the traffic metrics, engagement metrics with your website, and constantly testing, I think is what gives me the ability to say, okay, yes, I need to wait longer, but I can see things moving. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the testing comes in. I've been testing at Eon since day one. So it's really funny because even like the easiest thing, email subject line testing, it's the basic. To me, it's like such a low hanging fruit when it comes to data and understanding your effectiveness. And it's so easy to change. Mm-hmm. And I think that's somewhere where it's like the epitome of testing, of bringing the brand experience and voice to your content. How do you, in that short experience that the user receives, how do you bring the personalization into that? How do you bring your brand and tone and voice into that? And then you can actually test and see really quickly what works and what doesn't, and fix it really quickly. And I think that kind of sense of constantly looking at the data, constantly testing, is, I think, what I use to get my satisfaction from not being able to immediately see things. And I also, yes, with marketing, people will always say not to look at the data because you can't really, it's hard to say. I always say, I get it all, right? The data is part of the story, but it begins to tell the story, and we have to really rely on it.
So what have you learned about email subject line testing?
Wow. That's a whole other episode for this podcast. There are a lot of things that I've seen that work. And then when I try them, sometimes they won't work. It really depends. I think bringing personalization into the subject line, even is key. And when I say personalization, I don't necessarily mean the name. I feel like people are like, oh, we'll put the name.
And it's always it. It's always the name. The email is the example and it's always the name.
Exactly.
that's not it. Yeah.
And I think it's understanding where they are. It's understanding where they are at that moment where you're meeting them, right? Not looking like a headline, not looking like a marketing subject line, but actually looking like something that's personal.
Okay. So when you say meet them where they're at, show them that you know them, it's both related to the specific interactions that this prospect has had with you as a company, and I guess also where in the funnel they might be, if it's very top of funnel or you're trying to warm them up versus further down. And bottom line, you're trying to still differentiate yourself from whatever noise there is in their inbox and for the purposes of email marketing. And again, show them that there is some kind of, that you know them enough, that there is something relevant for them in this email. Should you open it?
Yeah. Should you open it?
I'm curious if there's other strategies or tactics that you feel like you've brought from your B2C experience now to Eon that make you, I think, a particularly innovative marketer in this space?
I think that what I've been seeing is that's very different, or not different, but it's something that traditionally at B2B products or companies, there is this relationship between marketing and sales, right? That constantly feeds each other and obviously are important for the business, that doesn't exist as much in B2C. And what I'm really trying to do, and I mentioned this in Lemonade, our experience of like, how do we make sure that the brand is everywhere and that tone of voice is everywhere? How to do that with sales? How to make sure that our sales reps and our sales team provide that same brand magic that we have in our website? It sometimes feels like B2B brands keep their beautiful brands to the website, maybe to their like email newsletter or a webinar, maybe, or not even a webinar. But when it comes to their demo video, it's that like product demo video. Mm-hmm. So I'm really hoping to do more of that, kind of make sure the brand magic is everywhere. There's no reason that our sales teams can't enjoy that, right? It's for them something great. They're creating relationships. They're nurturing those relationships. And the brand and our voice is, at the end of the day, their toolbox, also, in their toolbox. Yeah. So that's something that I really want to make sure we reinforce.
Do you have ideas of how to do that while still giving them the space to have their own personality? Because one of the things that makes good salespeople good is that they're able to turn something on in themselves. It's some kind of, it's magical. I could never do it. I'm really not for sales. But there is something that's very much driven by their personality, I think, and connecting with those other people, going back to human thing. So how do you layer a brand, even if it's a fun one, on top of that, in a way that maybe they're also, are they comfortable with?
It's a lot about the relationship and having them have the information and have the language and be able to use it when they're speaking, also in their, obviously in their kind of email interactions, and when they're presenting. So there's no reason that their emails or their PowerPoints should not have that magical brand. At Lemonade, we used to call it delight, the surprise and delight, right? You'd surprise and delight.
Words you don't normally associate with insurance, but that's exactly what Lemonade was trying to overcome.
So how do we create that sales presentation that at the end of the day, you're presenting, you're on a Zoom call with an IT executive or a chief security officer, and there's this deck. How do you make that our brand and that fun come through? Even if do you know what I mean? It's the small visuals. It's the language. It's how do you show customer testimonials in a way that's more exciting? So I think it's those little things that we like pepper in and really try to make the sales team, obviously, ambassadors, but create things that feel to them like it becomes part of how they talk about the product.
Yeah, I think that's such an important insight that you're sales team, like they're also very important ambassadors of your brand. And it might sound obvious, but in terms of execution, I would say most of the time doesn't actually happen. I also really love the fact that it sounds like the founders of Eon were looking for somebody with your background, with that edge. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
It's really interesting that it actually came up when we met and they talked about it. And I think now as I'm hiring and we're building the marketing team, right? For me, it's having those conversations and also trying to understand for where do I actually need a B2B versus B2C? Is that a bucket that I want to say?
I'm so glad that you brought this up because it's something that I really wanted to ask you. As someone who's kind of straddled both of those models, I think if you talk to anyone who's sat traditionally in either bucket, there are some like understood conventions. Like when you do B2B, you must do XYZ and they must have ABM and ABM looks like blah, blah, blah. And the same the other way around. And I think the luxury of being interdisciplinary in this way is that you can look at things with fresh eyes and say, actually, what I need is someone who's really good at content marketing and understands my ICP and can make that engaging and whatever. What are those things where you were like, what is the core skill set of the team I'm trying to build that's going to ultimately help me achieve the goal of growing this business that's not necessarily, that doesn't fall into the understood must-haves of traditional B2B marketing?
I think one of the questions that I ask always in interviews, and I've been doing this for years, is what companies or brands do you look to for inspiration? And I think when it comes to B2B, it's really, I get really interesting answers. And I actually love it when they say, I look at, they'll say some kind of a couple of B2B ones, but then they'll actually say, I look at Airbnb, I look at Apple, I look at who gives a crap, that toilet paper challenger brand. So I think that to me sparks something is, okay, this person is a marketer. I'm looking for a marketer, someone that can recognize what great content looks like, what can create engagement. Being able to create an email campaign or create a social media post is something that you can learn. You learn the product, you learn the brand, you can do that. That's the marketing profession. But being able to do it in a way that stands out, I think, and to have that eye to say, this is different and this is a challenger, I think is what I'm looking for. Someone that can be more critical and not just bring their same tone of voice across everything they do.
And honestly, shouldn't we all be aiming to delight in the end, whether you're B2C or B2B? I think everyone is going for that. No one wants to be not delightful.
I don't think everyone is going for it.
Everyone should be going for it.
Everyone should be going for it. That's true. And the flip version of that question is, were there things where you're like, actually, I just also really need RevOps is a bad example because that's not in marketing, but there are just some functions that when you're working in this type of business, there's a reason why things are done in a certain way. Was there something that you were like, okay, I absolutely must have whatever?
Yes. So what I learned is that these huge industry conferences are, first of all, they're wild and they are actually really, they're very impactful for the business. Yeah. You're there. It's so big. You can see all these different, you can see the brands that stand out. You can see those that are doing the same thing for the last decade. You can really learn a lot from that. And I think those interactions and that experience is something that doesn't exist as much in the consumer
space. For sure. And it sounds like you both learned a lot from these events and also got a lot of business value out of it. So can you give me like the top three things you learned? Because I've also, while they're very clearly important, I think they're also a very good opportunity to throw away a lot of money if you do it wrong.
Yes.
You know, just being there in the wrong way, might as well stay at home.
One is quality over quantity when it comes to these, to planning in advance and to post-event work. We were able to set up these one-on-one meetings that you're there. We're there. Let's meet. It's pretty easy. It's like a natural human interaction. And it's actually amazing because how many times or opportunities does a marketer have to create that natural interaction with their product or brand? Not a lot when you think about it. So that is something absolutely incredible that the value is just insane. And we're still recapping and following up. And a lot of meetings were set up in advance, most of them, but a lot of meetings were set up there because of the presence that we had there. And we were able to quickly convert from that. It's like a live funnel, IRL funnel that's happening on the ground. And it's really interesting. So that's one thing. And I think the other thing, and you mentioned it, it's so easy to come there and just get it wrong with a booth that doesn't make sense. And you spent all this money and you don't get enough out of it.
So there's something else that I want to ask you about, switching gears a little bit. Because when we first met, Tal, you had told me that when you first came into Eon, there was already an agency that had been hired and you weren't sure what to think about that. Contrast that to Lemonade, which is known for having built out like its own agency inside of the company. So you have two very different approaches here. And I'm curious, what are your thoughts? What are the pros and cons of building out those capabilities within a company versus having them externally and relying on an agency? And also, if you have any tips for startups deciding which direction we should go in.
It really depends on, you know, where you are and your size, obviously, and the resources you have. In-house creative teams are amazing, but it takes time to get there. A lot of investment, not just of dollars, but it's a lot to build a great creative team in-house. Also, I started my career in an agency. I think great agencies...
You know how to work with them, basically.
I think, first of all, you need to know how to work with an agency, that's for sure. But I think great agencies bring so much value that you don't get from your internal creative teams. Obviously, there are costs, but when you have a small team or no team, like I had for a couple of months now, the pros are definitely that you don't need to compromise for quality of your creative assets. You do not need to compromise if you have an agency that's working on it. You can share assets that look like you're already a big company, even if you're just a startup getting started. It gives you more flexibility and more agility. Agency teams have a really deep bench and a very diverse bench. And something that if you have your in-house team, it's very different. It's probably the opposite. So to me, there are great advantages there as a startup. And of course, in terms of cons, yeah, it can get costly. But there are a lot of great solutions these days. Obviously, the Fivers of the world, but Brief.com, which I've worked with, that is like a small platform for agencies to be able to offer their services, and you can execute creative projects within a kind of predefined budget.
Do you have any specific tips for effectively working with an agency? You were going to ask that, Paula?
Yeah, because we don't actually work with agencies.
One thing I learned at an agency is the importance of a brief. I think having a call and talking about what your goals are and what you want to do.
Oh, girl. Do we agree with you?
Yes, that's not a brief. And I think great agencies provide you with a great template that you can use and guide you through the brief process. And they make sure to spend that time to perfect the brief. Because if the
brief is like wrong, thing in marketing, no matter what, like you need that.
You need a brief.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, sometimes with an internal creative team, and I've seen this both at YouTube and Lemonade, you skip that brief step sometimes because it's internal. And there's something there that I think.
When I see that, I'm like, what are you? No, but because it's dangerous. I get what you're saying. You're very comfortable working with one another. Everyone thinks they're on the same page. Check again.
Exactly. And I think it makes you, as the kind of strategic thinking behind it, you have to think more about what you want. You have to come with a strategy. You can't just say, let's design something. And I think that's part of creative briefs are so critical. And I think the second thing, and this is, again, something I'm actually doing in interviews now, is talking about this, asking about people's experience working with creative teams. Because I think there is something to, and people have very different responses and like they talk about different experiences, where I just ask, how do you make sure when you're working with creative teams that your strategy or your vision comes to life in the way that you think is effective? And right, the answer in my mind is just the brief. That's what I want to hear. And people sometimes, you know, what they say is elements of the brief, but you'd be surprised at how some people just say, oh, we get on a call and just talk about this is what I need. And sometimes people say, I'll mock up something. It's a lot of different versions of it, but I really believe that there is huge importance to the actual brief.
How are you thinking about those first hires though? It sounds like you're interviewing a lot right now. You have your agency support. Like, what do you need in-house on your team now?
It's actually my top priority now, hiring. I'm like making sure that's something I think hiring great people is the most important thing, and it is the hardest thing. I've prioritized a few functions, a few roles for our first, the kind of nucleus of the team. Product marketing is the first one that will really, together with me, build and become the skeleton of our marketing department or work. The second one is content marketing. And that's also where is the line between those two. There's a lot of work together there. And then the third is this event / field marketing role, because like I mentioned, conferences are really a huge moment, a huge tactic. Those are the three that we're focusing on now as we start to build the team. But I also had this conversation this week with our leader, with one of our founders, saying we have to be opportunistic. I'm speaking with people, they're interviewing for one role. I don't think they're right for the role. Maybe we haven't even written a job description yet for another role, but this person is going to be great for our marketing team. So I think as a startup, you have to have that flexibility.
How are you thinking about in those three roles, specialists versus someone who maybe you could plug and play in either of those roles? Because this is something that I wouldn't consider Wix a startup anymore, but very much our team is in this agile mode. And I think some of the best hires I've made in the last year and a half were those people that I'm like, you're a joker. You're not the like event specialist, but I could probably get you to do an event, and I could also get you to do an email. And then if tomorrow we need to do a webinar, I can get you to do that too. And you'll figure it out. It's what you were referring to earlier on. Right now, I'm very committed to maintaining a team of generalists until this particular part of the business is mature enough for me to say, okay, for sure, I need this specialist. But at the moment, it's just we're adapting every day. So I don't want to commit to any one path.
That's always the question, right? Yeah. And I think that's the conversation I had about being opportunistic, because I think great people are so hard to find, and you don't want to miss that opportunity when you meet with someone, you have a great conversation. I think that sometimes is more important than saying, oh, he's going to fit right into this pigeonhole of social media manager. I do think that one of the important things is to make sure that they know what they're coming in for. So having the basic job description, roles and responsibilities from the get-go is very important for them not to get lost, especially in a startup where you can get pulled in so many directions all the time. It all starts from a business need. That's why you open a role. That's why you start hiring. Let's make sure that we actually address that, right? Not to forget. Yeah. Because right in a startup, we're constantly prioritizing. And so if we have this role open now, it means it's a P0. It means it's a priority. Let's not miss that because we met someone great who can manage our LinkedIn.
Ella, I think though that you bring up a really interesting point, which is that it's not just startups that need to have that agility and flexibility. Wix is a mature company, but it can be really dependent on the needs of that specific team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And I think even a large company should be aware of how they use their resources. After a certain point, if you have X number of team leads for their specific goals, they look down and they're like, I need a person that does this, and I need a person that does this, and I need a person that does this, because you get more and more specialized. And then before you know it, you have a marketing team of 1,000 people, right? That's not our case, but I'm exaggerating for effect, because it could happen if you just let everyone hire for the specialties that they would like to focus on. So I think when you're managing a marketing team of any size, there's this question of how much flexibility do I need versus how much specialization? And how likely are my needs today going to be my needs 6 months from now? And I think that's very hard, really, at any stage to know in marketing.
Yeah.
Marketing is everything is you're testing, and one algorithm can change everything. And then all of a sudden you're like, what's my generative AI search strategy when that wasn't even a thing? So it's something that's very top of mind for me because we're constantly like building a team. That's another thing. A team is never built. You're never done. And so the question is, how do I get the most out of the people, resources that I have at any given time? Yeah. But it's one of the wonderful, ineffable questions of marketing.
It's true both of how you're thinking about your hiring right now, but also clearly how the founders of Eon thought about hiring for your role. They weren't pigeonholed in this mindset of, I need a strong B2B marketer. They were thinking more broadly and more holistically about the skill sets that they needed based off of what they are trying to build. So I think it's a really important lesson for anyone thinking about, I'm a B2C marketer, can I transition to B2B? I'm a B2B marketer, can I transition to B2C? It actually might be that like one experience is a strength to the other, right? So I think that is a good note for us to transition on, since we've just about reached the end here. Tal, before we go, I have a couple questions for you that we ask all of our guests. What is inspiring you? And so we would love to know, who are you following? What are you reading? And what are you listening to?
Wow. So I, first of all, before I give the kind of like the PC answers, the reality is that marketers and humans are flooded with content, right, all the time. And I also make a point of reading things that are just for fun. And I think there's something also that inspires your brain to just, I love historical novels, for example. So I'm always reading something that takes me completely outside of what I'm doing the day to day. And I think that's super important for your kind of creativity and inspiration and to keep you going. Same thing for kind of listen, what I'm listening to. I also am trying to get back into my meditation routine. I think there's something so important about that to keep us focused and sharp. But other than that, a couple of people. So I actually follow Scott Galloway. He's an NYU professor. I think everyone loves him. He's great. He's known for being completely unexpected and saying whatever he thinks. Also has a great podcast that I listen to. I read the news, TechCrunch. Now I've gotten into TechCrunch and understanding kind of the startup and VC landscape. It's been something I've been on. Yeah, anything AI related, I make a point of listening to or following on LinkedIn. I think it's really interesting and insane, but also I also expect my team, everyone on my team, to be like AI first. And I think that's going to be, obviously everyone's talking about how it's going to change the marketing space, but I think it already has, and it will continue to.
Tal, thank you so much. This has been an amazing conversation. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you and getting to know you. This is it for this episode of Funnel Vision. You can find us on all the major podcast platforms, and we'll be posting the full interview on YouTube under the Wix Studio page. Be sure to hit subscribe to stay up to date on our latest episodes. You can also find more great resources for marketers at our content hub linked below or in the show notes. Thank you, everyone, and we will see you next time.